Who can tell me this evening what significant event happened in this country between the years 1861 and 1865? What significant event? Okay, the Civil War. And as you very well realize, during those years between 1861 and 1865, this land was engulfed in war, serious war. And there were thousands upon thousands of men that died as they fought for a cause that they strongly believed in. Only as these men fought, they were not engaged in battle against some foreign nation. Rather, they were engaged in battle against their own people. During those 4 years, our country was embroiled in the Civil War. We have the northern states fighting against the southern states. Of course, as you realize, the southern states had seceded from the Union and had formed their own confederacy of states. They declared independence, but as the Confederacy declared independence, the Union was not too fond of that declaration. And in the end, the Union won the war, the Confederacy was defeated, the states were joined together as one again. Now, we today know about this war from maybe our school days, maybe from documentaries we've watched on TV, maybe as we've studied this period of history on our own. But none of us were alive during those years. None of us have personally talked with someone who went through those years around the Civil War. But we realize how important this war was. Can you imagine today what life would be like if the Confederacy was successful in the rebellion and they had won the war instead of the Union? Life would be very much different, wouldn't it? If there wasn't the United States of America that has 50 states, we'd have the Confederacy down south and we'd have the Union up north. But as much as the Civil War still affects us today, the outcome of that Civil War, we realize that those who are alive during that period of time were to a far greater extent affected by the events of the Civil War. Think about if you were able to talk with somebody alive during that time, and say you were talking with the person that was living in the north, like we're living in the north right now, and you talk with that person, well, what do you think about this war? No doubt they would have some very strong opinions, and in all likelihood, this person from the north would affirm that the cause of the north was a just cause. It was a good cause, a right cause. Now, if you travel down south and you talked with somebody from the south, probably you'd find just as strong of emotions, as strong of a belief that their cause was just and right. Now, we could talk about the American Civil War quite a bit this evening, but we're going to direct our focus on another time during history, not this nation, but the nation of Israel. And the time period that we want to focus in on is that time period after Israel had entered the promised land of Canaan. They had conquered many cities under Joshua's leadership, and each tribe of Israel, excepting the tribe of Levi, each tribe had been given an allotment of land, and it was up to each tribe to take the initiative and take possession of that land for itself. Now, as we read the record of those days in the book of Judges, we understand that the tribes were not faithful in obeying the Lord's command to possess the land, to destroy the inhabitants that lived there. We have tribe after tribe after tribe that was content to live with the local Canaanites, to intermarry with them, to adopt the Canaanites' pagan ways of thinking and worship. And it was during those days of the judges that there was a certain Levite that was sojourning in the region of Ephraim. This Levite had taken a concubine from Bethlehem in Judah. This concubine was unfaithful to the Levite. That concubine left him and went instead to her father's house. And after a period of time, the Levite was determined to go after her and bring her back home. So the Levite left his home in Ephraim, went down to Bethlehem, and he was invited into the house of the concubine's father by his concubine herself. And her father, the Levite's father-in-law, apparently took a liking to him. The father-in-law extended hospitality to him for a number of days. The Levite, though, was wanting to go back home after a time. And even though the father-in-law kept on pressing him to stay longer, to stay with him and eat and drink and enjoy their time together, eventually the Levite got up one morning determined to go home. The father-in-law convinced him to stay a little bit longer, stay for a meal. The father-in-law said, stay for the night. But the Levite this time refused his offer. Yes, the day was late, but the Levite was determined to start his journey, and that he did. But it wasn't too far before the sun was low in the sky, and it was very apparent that they would have to stay the night somewhere on the way. His servant suggested they stay in the city of Jerusalem. But the Levite didn't want to stay there because that was the city of the Jebusites. It was not a city of his fellow Israelites. No, they would continue on their way and go to Gibeah or Ramah, cities of their own countrymen. So they continued traveling, and they reached the city of Gibeah as the sun was setting. Now, initially, nobody took them in for the night, but eventually there was an old man coming in from the fields, and this old man invited them in to stay at his house for the night. And the Levite was very glad. He took his offer of hospitality. They went to the house, washed their feet. They were enjoying a good time together, eating a meal. And then all of a sudden, what do they hear? They hear men from the city who had surrounded the house, and now they're banging on the door. And they're demanding that the old man bring out his guest, the Levite, so that they could have sex with him. The old man went out to talk with the men of the city. The old man tried to dissuade these men from Gibeah from their wicked plans. And he offered instead to bring out his daughter, to bring out the concubine of the Levite. And they could do with them as they pleased. But they must not act so wickedly against his guest, this Levite. But the men of Gibeah would have none of it. The Levite apparently overheard what was being said, and he decided to take matters into his own hand. He brought out his concubine to the wicked men, and they raped her and abused her all night. And as the sun began to rise, and the morning was breaking, the concubine made her way back to the house, collapsed, and her hands were upon the threshold of the door. Now, apparently that night, the Levite had fallen asleep, even as those wicked men were ravaging his concubine. And when morning came, he got up to continue his journey. He opened the door to leave. There he saw his concubine. He told her to get up, but not so much as a word came back from his concubine. The Levite took his concubine, laid her on his donkey, went back home. Then he took a knife and cut her body into 12 pieces and sent each piece by messenger throughout the land of Israel. And then we read this report that we find in Judges chapter 19, verse 30. And it was so that all that saw it said, there was no such deed done nor seen from the day that the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto this day. Consider of it, take advice, and speak your minds. It is in this context that we come to our present passage, Judges chapter 20. And how would Israel react to these morbid parcels that had been sent out by the Levite? What would be done concerning the wicked act done by the men of Gibeah? And the answer is found in our chapter here, Judges chapter 20. Nothing less than civil war erupts between the tribe of Benjamin and the other tribes of Israel. If you haven't already done so, I invite you to turn with me in your Bibles to Judges chapter 20. In our Pew Bibles, it's page 320, and our passage begins with verse 1. Then all the children of Israel went out, and the congregation was gathered together as one man, from Dan even to Beersheba, with the land of Gilead, unto the Lord in Mizpah. The Levite had sent out his gruesome parcels. He had done something that never had been done before in Israel. And what the Levite did was prompted by the terribly wicked actions of the men of Gibeah, actions that should have been just as appalling to all of those who heard about it. Now, we might wonder how Israel would respond, but this verse, verse 1 of chapter 20, leaves us with very few questions. We learn that all Israel responded to the message. They gathered together with a unity of purpose. They were as one man from north to south. Even those who lived on the other side of the Jordan, they responded as well. And together they joined in Mizpah, a city that is north of Jerusalem, a city that is northwest of Gibeah, on the border between Ephraim and Benjamin. And then we read this in verses 2 and 3. And the chief of all the people, even of all the tribes of Israel, presented themselves in the assembly of the people of God, 400,000 footmen that drew sword. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel were gone up to Mizpah. Then said the children of Israel, tell us, how was this wickedness? Now, in verse 1, we learned that all Israel responded to the summons of the Levite. They came to Mizpah as one man. They were united in purpose. But from that report in verse 1, we are not to understand that every single man, woman, and child that was throughout the land of Israel came to Mizpah. We aren't to understand that because, as we learn in verse 2, It was only men that responded, and particularly these were the fighting men that responded. We have 400,000 soldiers that were equipped with swords that gathered together in Mizpah. And of these are certain rulers or leaders of the people that would have come forward. And it surely was these leaders that asked for further details from the Levites. And, of course, they probably already had some details that had been spread through the messengers of the Levites. But now they want more details. How did this evil happen? Now, before we read the answer to their question, we also notice in our verses 2 and 3 here that we have a suspicion that not all of the tribes of Israel responded to the Levites' call. The tribe of Benjamin seems to be missing. Because notice what it says there in verse 3. Now the children of Benjamin heard that the children of Israel were gone up to Mizpah. So Benjamin didn't respond to the call to gather together. Benjamin was missing. Now had the Levite not sent a messenger to Benjamin? I don't think that's the answer. Their absence was for another reason. And we'll find out as we continue reading through the chapter what Benjamin's take was on this whole scenario. But now we focus our attention on the Levite. Look at verses 4 through 7. How would he respond to the leader's question, how did this wickedness come to pass? Verse 4, and the Levite, the husband of the woman that was slain, answered and said, I came into Gibeah that belongeth to Benjamin, I and my concubine to lodge. And the men of Gibeah rose against me and beset the house round about upon me by night, and thought to have slain me, and my concubine have they forced that she is dead. And I took my concubine and cut her in pieces and sent her throughout all the country of the inheritance of Israel, for they have committed lewdness and folly in Israel. Behold, ye are all children of Israel. Give here your advice and counsel. The Levite gives an answer to the leaders of Israel, and he sums up what happened, how this terrible act of wickedness had come to pass. Now, in giving his report, necessarily he leaves out certain details. But it is intriguing as we compare what the Levite says in his report to the leaders, and we compare that with what we read earlier in chapter 19. The Levite in his report to the leaders says nothing about his role in giving the concubine himself to the men of Gibeah. He says nothing about that. Not a word is said about how the Levite came to the door that morning and had a very cold reception to his concubine whenever he found her there at the doorstep. Her hands upon the threshold. It seems that the Levite is telling his story in such a way that he is presented in a good light, as one who is the victim of unfortunate circumstances. Now, there is no doubt the men of Gibeah were terribly wicked men. And he tells the Israelite leaders they wanted to kill him. They violated his concubine so that she died. And it's because of this that he cut up her body and sent it throughout the land. These men had done a terrible act of wickedness, a disgraceful thing. And such evil in the land demanded a response. And the question was, what did these men standing before him, these leaders of Israel, what did they think should be done? What were their thoughts? What was their counsel? And so we read in verses 8 through 11, and all the people arose as one man, saying, we will not any of us go to his tent, neither will we any of us turn into his house. But now this shall be the thing which we will do to Gibeah. We will go up by lot against it, and we will take 10 men of 100 throughout all the tribes of Israel, and 100 of 1,000, and 1,000 out of 10,000, to fetch victuals for the people, that they may do when they come to Gibeah of Benjamin, according to all the folly that they have wrought in Israel. So all the men of Israel were gathered against the city, knit together as one man. Earlier we read that all Israel came to Mizpah as one man. Now the response to the Levite and his report was also without disagreement. They were united as one man. Together, with unity of purpose, they declared that their intent was to take action against this wickedness that had been done in Gibeah. So not one person would go back to his tent. And no doubt you can picture how many tents there in Mizpah as they were gathered together. So not one man is going to go back to his tent. Not one man is going to travel back to his home, his house. They would take military action against them. That seems to be the picture anyway. Anyway, we're going to stay together until this matter is dealt with. They would select certain men as well to secure provisions for them. So here, Israel is determined to make Gibeah pay for the evil that they had committed in the land. They were united. They made a plan for their success. So Israel's army came against Gibeah. with their hundreds of thousands of soldiers. But before the attack, they wanted to give their fellow Israelites, the Benjamites, an opportunity to do what is right, to take action themselves against the wickedness that was committed in their midst. And so we read in verses 12 and 13, "And the tribes of Israel sent men through all the tribe of Benjamin, saying, 'What wickedness is this that is done among you? Now therefore deliver us the men, the children of Belial, which are in Gibeah, that we may put them to death and put away evil from Israel.' But the children of Benjamin would not hearken to the voice of their brethren, the children of Israel." The demands of the Israelites, the demand that they offered, or that they declared, that they made plain to Benjamin, wasn't an unreasonable demand. It actually is quite a reasonable demand. And we think about in the days of the judges, there was so much wrong-headed thinking that was going on in those days. It does seem that the Israelites are making quite a lot of sense in this case. The Israelites had recognized sin for what it is. It was an extreme case of wickedness that was committed within Benjamin's borders, and that sin had to be dealt with. And so the Israelites' demand of the Benjamites to hand over the guilty men so that they could be put to death, because these men were worthy of death. But sadly, how did the people of Benjamin respond? They wouldn't listen to the voice of reason. They refused to heed the words of their fellow countrymen. They refused to turn over the guilty ones so that they could receive their due punishment. Instead, what do? They do something far from reasonable, as we read in verses 14 through 17. "But the children of Benjamin gathered themselves together out of the cities unto Gibeah to go out to battle against the children of Israel. And the children of Benjamin were numbered at that time out of the cities 26,000 men that drew sword, beside the inhabitants of Gibeah, which were numbered 700 chosen men. Among all this people, there were 700 chosen men left-handed. Everyone could sling stones at an hair breadth and not miss. And the men of Israel beside Benjamin were numbered 400,000 men that drew sword. All these were men of war." The people of Benjamin, instead of recognizing that there was terrible wickedness that was done in their midst, instead of condemning the sin that had happened, instead of taking appropriate action against it, what does Benjamin do? Benjamin rallies around their accused brothers. They rally the troops to defend the men of Gibeah. We read that 26,000 sword-bearing soldiers were mustered from the cities of Benjamin. These came alongside the 700 that were from Gibeah. And among those soldiers, it appears that there were 700 that stood out from the rest. These ones were left-handed, and they had a very special skill in that they had slings, and they were able to hit something so very small, even the size of a hair, they could hit that with their sling and stone. These men from Benjamin were quite the formidable force. But yet, what was 26,000 or so in comparison to 400,000 or so? Yet, Benjamin was stubborn in their determination to fight off any advance from the other tribes. Yes, Israel was united as one man to deal with the evil, but Benjamin was united as one man to protect the evil in its midst. The battle lines have been drawn. Both sides are ready to engage the enemy. Sadly, though, the enemy is not some foreign nation. The enemy is not the ungodly Canaanites within their borders. Rather, it's brother against brother, Israel against Benjamin. And we continue with verse 18, "And the children of Israel arose and went to the house of God and asked counsel of God and said, 'Which of us shall go up first to the battle against the children of Benjamin?' And the Lord said, 'Judah shall go up first.'" Our focus has returned to the hundreds of thousands of Israel with all of their leaders. And we read in the King James that they went to the house of God to ask counsel of God. There's another way to translate that phrase, house of God. We can refer to it as a place, and as far as like a city. So the house of God is an appropriate translation, but also you realize there is a city that is named, and you translate it the house of God, and that's Bethel. And it is very possible that they went to Bethel, and this is where the Ark of the Covenant had been brought. Whatever the case, Israel is seeking counsel from God. And their request reminds us of the first verse of the book of Judges. And if you remember all the way back then in the first verse of the book of Judges, the children of Israel asked God who should go up for them against the Canaanites, who should go up first to fight against them. And in that case, it was Judah that should go up first. In this case, who is the one that is to go up against the children of Benjamin? Judah should go up. Judah was chosen of God. Now, with this instruction from the Lord, the children of Israel are determined to engage in battle with the Benjamites. So we read in verses 19 through 21, "And the children of Israel rose up in the morning and encamped against Gibeah, and the men of Israel went out to battle against Benjamin. And the men of Israel put themselves in array to fight against them at Gibeah. And the children of Benjamin came forth out of Gibeah and destroyed down to the ground of the Israelites that day 22,000 men." Can you imagine Israel after that first day of battle? What shock, what disappointment, what discouragement perhaps. Their hundreds of thousands were soundly defeated by the vastly smaller army of the Benjamites. And 22,000 of the Israelite army had been struck down. So the number of casualties in Israel's army was almost as large as the Benjamite army, the total number of the Benjamite army. Well, we continue reading verses 22 and 23. "And the people of the men of Israel encouraged themselves and set their battle again in array in the place where they put themselves in array the first day. And the children of Israel went up and wept before the Lord until even and asked counsel of the Lord, saying, 'Shall I go up again to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother?' And the Lord said, 'Go up against him.'" Now, 22,000 men is a very large number of casualties, but still, with these casualties, the army of Israel still vastly outnumbers the army of Benjamin. Their defeat on that first day no doubt surprised them, maybe very discouraging, or at least somewhat discouraging, but they weren't discouraged to the point where they weren't wanting to go and fight again. In fact, it says that they encouraged themselves, so they were still determined to gain the victory, to make Gibeah pay for their act of wickedness. Now, after their defeat, they ready themselves for battle as they had the first day. They weep before the Lord. They seek his counsel, and they ask the Lord, "Should we engage the Benjamites in battle again?" And the Lord responds, "Go up against him." And so we read in verses 24 and 25, "And the children of Israel came near against the children of Benjamin the second day, and Benjamin went forth against them out of Gibeah the second day and destroyed down to the ground of the children of Israel, again, 18,000 men. All these drew the sword." Day two of the battle turns out much the same as day one of the battle. Yes, day two's casualties are somewhat lower. We have 18,000 instead of, what, the 22,000 of day one. But still, that's a lot of men that were killed or at least harmed. Now we wonder, how could the Benjamites inflict such harm upon the Israelite armies? Some have suggested that key to their victory is the 700 skilled soldiers who have slings. Now what are you able to do with a sling that you can't do with a sword? You can use your sling and attack the enemy while they're at a distance, right? So how many Israelite soldiers did these 700 slingers kill or disable before they ever got close enough to engage in battle? You know, surely the 700 skilled left-handed soldiers with their slings did some major damage to the Israelite army. We also think, what were the Benjamites doing? The Benjamites were defending their home territory. You'd think that they'd have more motivation. We wonder, too, were the Benjamites just more fierce, more deadly than their Israelite counterparts? In the end, we don't have the answer to all these questions, but we do know it was God who determined the outcome of day one battle and day two battle. God was in control. Now, after such a defeat on that second day, Israel responds differently than they had before. We come to verses 26 through 28. "Then all the children of Israel and all the people went up and came unto the house of God and wept and sat there before the Lord and fasted that day until even and offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before the Lord. And the children of Israel inquired of the Lord, for the ark of the covenant of God was there in those days. And Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron, stood before it in those days, saying, 'Shall I yet again go out to battle against the children of Benjamin, my brother, or shall I cease?' And the Lord said, 'Go up, for tomorrow I will deliver them into thine hand.'" Now before, after day one's defeat, there were certain of the Israelites that wept before the Lord. Or maybe you'd say the whole army wept before the Lord. They sought his counsel. But here, it's made quite clear that all the children of Israel, even all the people, went up to weep before the Lord. They fasted all day until nightfall. They offered burnt offerings. They offered peace offerings to the Lord. It seems as if after this second day of defeat, Israel is finally seeking the Lord in a heartfelt manner, a genuine way. It makes us wonder if before it was more of an artificial seeking of the Lord. But after two humiliating defeats, it seems that the Lord now has their attention. And they seek the Lord again, and they ask, well, should we go against our brother again, or should we give up our efforts? And the Lord responds, go up, tomorrow I will give them into your hand. And there is an interesting note here. The high priest at this point in time was who? It was Phinehas, the son of Eleazar. No doubt it was Phinehas that inquired of the Lord, maybe with the Urim and Thummim, and gave an answer. But we realize also by this reference to Phinehas that what happened during this time period was not late in the days of the judges. It was rather early in the days of the judges. How sad it is that Gibeah had become like Sodom so soon after Joshua's death. How sad it is that the tribe of Benjamin was so keen on defending their wicked countrymen, their fellow Benjamites who were so wicked, that they were intent on defending them so short a time after Joshua's death. How quickly sin had gotten a grip on God's people. Now God had told Israel, engage in battle with Benjamin again, and this time he promised them the victory. And so we read in verses 29 and following. And Israel set liers in wait round about Gibeah, and the children of Israel went up against the children of Benjamin on the third day, and put themselves in array against Gibeah as at other times. The children of Benjamin went out against the people and were drawn away from the city, and they began to smite of the people and kill, as at other times, in the highways, of which one goeth up to the house of God, and the other to Gibeah in the field, about 30 men of Israel. And the children of Benjamin said, they are smitten down before us, as at the first. But the children of Israel said, let us flee, and draw them from the city unto the highways. And all the men of Israel rose up out of their place, and put themselves in array at Baal Tamar. And the liers in wait of Israel came forth out of their places, even out of the meadows of Gibeah. And there came against Gibeah 10,000 chosen men out of all Israel. And the battle was sore, but they knew not that that evil was near them. And the Lord smote Benjamin before Israel. And the children of Israel destroyed of the Benjamites that day 25,000 and 100 men. All these drew the sword. Now, I won't comment on all the details of the battle that's recorded in these verses. But let me say just a few things. You'll notice that Israel took a different strategy this time. Instead of keeping all their men together as they had before, they took some of their men and they set an ambush. When the battle began, Israel drew the Benjamite troops away from the city. They suffered some casualties. And Benjamin even thought, we're going to have the victory today, even as we had on the first 2 days. But things would turn out far differently. Now, Israel's strategy was a good one, but it's what we read in verse 35 that gives us the explanation for Israel's success that day. It was the Lord who smote Benjamin before Israel. It wasn't Israel's planning in and of itself that made the difference. It was God fulfilling his promise. It was God who gave Israel the victory. It was God's hand of judgment that came upon the Benjamites who were so intent on defending the sin in its midst. Now, we have more details about the battle in the next verses, so let's read verses 36 and following. So the children of Benjamin saw that they were smitten, for the men of Israel gave place to the Benjamites, because they trusted unto the liers in wait, which they had set beside Gibeah. And the liers in wait hasted and rushed upon Gibeah, and the liers in wait drew themselves along and smote all the city with the edge of the sword. Now there was an appointed sign between the men of Israel and the liers in wait, that they should make a great flame with smoke rise up out of the city. And when the men of Israel retired in the battle, Benjamin began to smite and kill of the men of Israel about 30 persons, for they said, surely they are smitten down before us, as in the first battle. But when the flame began to arise up out of the city with a pillar of smoke, the Benjamites looked behind them, and behold, the flame of the city ascended up to heaven. And when the men of Israel turned again, the men of Benjamin were amazed, for they saw that evil was come upon them. Therefore they turned their backs before the men of Israel unto the way of the wilderness. But the battle overtook them, and them which came out of the cities they destroyed in the midst of them. Thus they enclosed the Benjamites round about, and chased them, and trode them down with ease over against Gibeah toward the sun rising. And there fell of Benjamin 18,000 men. All these were men of valor. And they turned and fled toward the wilderness unto the rock of Rimmon. And they gleaned of them in the highways 5,000 men, and pursued hard after them unto Gidom, and slew 2,000 men of them, so that all which fell that day of Benjamin were 25,000 men that drew the sword. All of these were men of valor. The 600 men turned and fled to the wilderness unto the rock Rimmon, and abode in the rock Rimmon 4 months. Day three of this battle was a day of victory for Israel. The ambush worked just as they had hoped, and while the Benjamites were engaged with the bulk of the Israelite army, they were drawn away from the city. The men in ambush, they came upon the city, they killed all the inhabitants of the city, they set it on fire. When the Benjamites saw that the city was taken, they saw the smoke rising from the city, they realized the battle was not theirs. They rather were doomed. Now, most of their number were killed just outside of Gibeah, but some of them fled. Israel pursued. Most of these were killed as well, those who were fleeing of the Gibeah, of the Benjamite army. Now, of the army of Benjamin, only 600 escaped. They fled to the rock Rimmon. And we read there that they abode in the rock Rimmon 4 months. Now, Israel did not bother chasing after those 600 who escaped. Rather, they set their eyes elsewhere, as we read in verse 48. And the men of Israel turned again upon the children of Benjamin and smote them with the edge of the sword, as well the men of every city as the beast, and all that came to hand. Also they set on fire all the cities that they came to. Instead of hunting down those 600 men who escaped to the rock Rimmon, the armies of Israel decided they were going to turn against all of the cities of Benjamin. So city after city after city, they ravaged. It seems that they killed all of those who were in the cities. All the men, and it sure seems as if it's all the women and all the children as well. That they killed all the beasts. So utter destruction for all of the cities of Benjamin. They set on fire all the cities that they came to. So complete, utter destruction. And in the end, all that remained of Benjamin was 600 men. All else was wiped off the face of the earth. And we'll read what happens next in Judges chapter 21, and we'll see that next week. But for this evening, we have read of a most noteworthy event in Israel's history. The civil war between Israel and Benjamin was a very vicious war, and both sides were committed to their cause. Now, Israel far outnumbered Benjamin, but it wasn't an easy victory for the bigger army, not by any means, not for those first 2 days. Now, in the end, the united tribes of Israel won over their smaller adversary, Benjamin. But it wasn't just because of their numbers, it wasn't just because of their strategy, it was the Lord that gave them the victory. It was God who, in the end, judged the rebellious Benjamites. Now, let's consider what we can learn from this passage. And there's any number of things we can learn. But one of the clearest lessons is God is in control. God is the one who gives victory. But let us not forget that God was also in control on day one of the battle. And on day two of the battle, God was still in control. And on day one and day two, the Israelite men, they were defeated, soundly defeated by the wicked Benjamites. Now, God had told them on that first day of battle, Judah should go up first. He said on the second day of battle, go up again against them. God told them to go to battle, but God did not give them the victory. Well, what can we learn from that? God is a God who not only brings about victory, but he is also a God who brings about defeat. And we can learn from both. And Israel could learn from both. And I wonder, why did God have Israel lose by such a large number on day one and then again on day two? Is God teaching Israel humility? Is he teaching them to rely more fully on him? And I believe that God is teaching Israel these lessons. Now, Israel definitely seems zealous to bring judgment upon the wicked behavior of Gibeah. But I wonder sometimes about their motives, taking the action that they did, especially as we consider what they did after they destroyed Gibeah. What did they do? They wiped out all of Benjamin except for how many? 600 men. Were they doing what God wanted them to do whenever they wiped out virtually the entire tribe of Benjamin? Or were they carried away by their own excitement and their own rage? Now we look at Israel and we look at Benjamin. We see both of them are united together in their purposes. They're as one man. Now Israel was united in what we could say was a very good cause as far as wanting to punish what was evil. They condemned, they judged that evil. Benjamin, how sad it is, they were united in defending evil. Benjamin valued their blood relatives more highly than they valued God and his commands and his holiness. Benjamin was willing to fight to the death to defend their guilty brothers. Benjamin would not admit that their brothers were in the wrong. They refused to do what was right. They refused to judge ones in their own tribe who had sinned so terribly. There's much we can learn today from this chapter in Judges. Now we, in many ways, are far separated from what we read here in Judges chapter 20. But what can we learn from this as a church? Well, we can learn we should be united together as a church to do what is right. We want to be united as one man, and we want to have the right motives, and we want to seek God's guidance as we seek to do the right thing, and we want to be united together in this. And let's not be like the tribe of Benjamin. Benjamin was united together as one man, and they valued family, blood relatives, over God and his word. May we today never value friends or family more than we value God and his word. May we never defend sin. May we never be so rebellious and stubborn as the Benjamites were. May the Lord teach us from the events of this period in Israel's history. We can learn from the good, we can learn from the bad, but may we continually seek God's face and continually trust God's sovereignty. May God help us, may he teach us from his word. Heavenly Father, we thank you for what you've shown us here in the book of Judges. And we see a terrible civil war, and the tribes of Israel united as one man to act against the wickedness that had been committed in Gibeah. We see the men of Benjamin united together, yet they were united together for a very wicked and evil cause. I pray that we'd be united together as a church, but united together to do what is right, and that we'd always be following your leading and not go astray in what we think is right. So Lord, help us with these things. Help us to be seeking your face at all times. We pray these things in Jesus' name.